You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, this is Tim McMaster taking you around the National League East with MLB.com Extras. With less than a week to go before opening day, teams are making final decisions on their rosters. Let's start this week with MLB.com Mets reporter Anthony DiComo. Anthony, scary stuff on Monday as far as just not knowing what was going on with Matt Harvey. But as we record this on Tuesday, a little more information out there now. And the reason Harvey was shut down for the rest of the spring, blood clots in his bladder, which isn't something you often hear about. But it sounds like he's still set on schedule for opening day. From what you've heard from talking to Harvey, hearing from Harvey, how scary was this whole situation, just not knowing for him and the team?
Well, real scary before it was diagnosed, Tim, because like you said, no one, himself included, really knew what was going on. He said he had a little trouble going to the bathroom. He was in pain two nights ago and then woke up and finally reported his symptoms to the training staff, and they took care of it. But there was probably a 36-hour period there where it was very touch and go as far as knowing what was going on. And anyone who's ever had a medical issue that seems serious that you don't know what it is, it can be very, very scary. Now, they dodged a bullet on this one. Matt Harvey certainly did. He's fine. He passed the blood clot and is totally free to go back to baseball activities and totally good to go for the opener in Kansas City. But yeah, very scary situation, and I think the Mets are extremely happy to have this in their past.
And I guess a public service announcement of sorts comes out of this, because Harvey admitting on Tuesday that he tends to hold it a little too long when he needs to go to the bathroom. So
go to the bathroom, folks.
Yes.
If you feel like you have to go, don't ignore it. I'm never going to do it myself ever again.
So good news, and something we can kind of joke about now, but obviously dodging a bullet. And I think fans really not knowing what was going on instantly start to think, oh no, it's his arm, here we go again, you know, bad news for the Mets. But in the end, everything seems to be good, and Harvey should be there ready to go Sunday night on opening day. All right, so moving on to some other injury notes, so to speak, for this team. Asdrubal Cabrera getting back into the lineup on Monday as far as the major league spring training goes. Now, he missed, you know, nearly 3 weeks, Anthony. If he's ready to go on opening day, how does this affect him as far as with a new team, getting comfortable with Neil Walker as his second baseman, and just everything that goes into being comfortable with a new franchise? How much has these 3 weeks affected him?
Not a lot, I don't think, to be honest. He's a veteran player. He knows what he has to do to get ready, and you could say the same about Neil Walker. So despite the fact that they missed these real game reps, as shortstop and second baseman, I really don't think they need a lot of reps to do it. I mean, they took plenty of them out on the backfields before games ever began. And so I don't think it's going to affect them to any great extent. Certainly, this is the biggest injury concern the Mets have had all spring, and that's a good thing because it's completely resolved now. He's back playing in games, and the Mets would never have put him in Grapefruit League games if they weren't positive he would be ready for opening day. So he'll be there. He'll be playing shortstop, and you're looking at a Mets lineup that's going to be whole on opening day. It seems like a simple thing, but over the years, that hasn't always necessarily been the case as we wind up March and head into April. So good news on that front for the Mets. And, yeah, will there be some growing pains between him and Walker and getting comfortable with each other? Sure. A lot of that is experience, but I really don't think it's anything that's going to be visible to fans, visible to opponents on a regular basis.
With a little under a week to go before the opener, not much left to decide for this Mets team over the last few spring training games, but the bullpen is one thing. For the most part, most of it is set, but the last spot, maybe two spots still open there. And also an interesting when you have a minor suspension they have to deal with, and then the chance to maybe go with one less reliever early on in the season. Just kind of sum up what's going on there with those last couple spots in the bullpen.
Yeah, still definitely a little bit up in the air, and Matt Harvey's situation actually affected that because the Mets are tentatively planning right now to go a man short in their bullpen on opening day, and really that's two men short because they will carry Hansel Robles, who's going to serve a two-game suspension, so he won't be in play for Kansas City. But effectively it means they have a five-man bullpen, and yet you're also carrying Bartolo Colon and Steven Matz, both of whom the Mets are leaning towards using in relief, whether that's piggybacking on one of the other starters if they go short, or just pitching an inning and pitching in that way. So if Matt Harvey was unable to go and the Mets had to start either Colon or Matt the first game of the season, that would have affected things. But Harvey's health obviously puts it in a better situation. Now it's just a matter of who gets that final spot. The Mets came into camp with a bunch of five locks, essentially, for their bullpen. And that was Familia, Addison Reed, and Antonio Bastardo as the setup men, Jerry Blevins and Robles, who's suspended. So you've got one more spot, essentially, because the Mets are only going with that six-man bullpen on opening day. It could have gone to Eric Cadell, but he hasn't really been healthy all spring, so that doesn't look like it's going to be the case. It could go to Jim Henderson, who's probably had the best spring of anyone and really deserves it. But the Mets would like to have a long man out of the bullpen, so I think it's going to be Sean Gilmartin will be that guy, at least temporarily. I do think Jim Henderson will be up before long. He has an out on his contract in mid-June, so the Mets will have an incentive eventually to get him in the bullpen. But right now, as we stand less than a week out from opening day, my money would go on Sean Gilmartin, who is starting today in Port St. Lucie, to lock down the final bullpen spot for the Mets.
Wilmer Flores, in the last week or 2 weeks, getting some first base work in, I know, with Keith Hernandez, obviously one of the all-time great first baseman, 11 gold gloves in his career, kind of getting some one-on-one time with Wilmer Flores. How much more valuable would it make Flores on this roster if he can get a grasp of first base and be able to just add that to his resume?
Well, to be honest with you, the Mets are hoping not very, because they're hoping Wilmer Flores doesn't have to play a lot of first base. The only reason you would is if Lucas Duda is hurt or really struggling against lefties. And Eric Campbell, for whatever reason, is not an option. Now, Campbell is going to be on the roster opening day, it seems like. So he would be that primary backup at first base. But down the line, yeah, it does add a little flexibility, versatility. If you have a guy who's capable of playing all four infield positions defensively and doesn't have to be a gold glover, doesn't have to be a star, but just can go out there and man the position and do it adequately for you, that's big. The Mets had a little bit of that with Kelly Johnson last year, and it helped them out. Kelly Johnson wasn't much of a shortstop, but he was able to go there from time to time and fill in times of needs. So that's sort of where the Mets are at with Wilmer Flores right now, kind of a break glass in case of emergency over at first base. But he's certainly capable of playing second, short, and third base at this point. If he can add first base to that, to the point where the Mets are comfortable putting him out there, it can only help. But like I said, Lucas Duda is the guy over there. Eric Campbell would be the secondary option right now. And Wilmer Flores probably third on the depth chart as we go into opening day.
About a week to go until opening day. Finally, spring training is kind of coming to an end. And when you look at this Nationals team and spring training, it's got to be nice to look around that clubhouse. And for the most part, everybody's healthy.
Oh, no question about it. I think that's why they have the winning record that they have. And I think the atmosphere, because of Dusty Baker, I think that's why they're winning right now. And Dusty Baker has some decisions to make before they head north.
Yeah, let's get into some of those decisions. You look at the bullpen. You also look at the bench as far as guys coming off the bench. Let's start with the bullpen. How many spots are still in play, and who has the inside track at them right now?
Well, they have one spot left. And my guess is Sean Burnett has to be a candidate. Trevor Gott, who they recently acquired from the Angels, those two guys are candidates. But my guess is Sean Burnett will be the guy to go on the team, because Dusty Baker has told us many times that Trevor Gott needs secondary pitches to be better on the mound. So it would not surprise me if it came down to that.
Very good. And then when you look at that bench spot, the bench as a whole, I kind of like what I see with this bench. You have Michael Taylor, Stephen Drew, Clint Robinson, and I guess Jose Lobaton. Those guys are kind of the locks. And then you have that last spot, and there's a lot of guys kind of still in the running. Guys like Chris Heisey, Brendan Ryan jump out. What direction do you think Dusty ends up going in the end?
This is the tough one. The way Brendan Ryan's playing, I have to say he's got to be the one of them because of his defense. He plays great defense. He could spell for Daniel Murphy. and he's hitting as well. I mean, he hasn't been hitting in the last few years, but he's showing Dusty Baker that he can get on base often. So I have to say the edge has to go to, you know, Brendan Rhyan, although Heisey's starting to hit. Reed Johnson is, you know, the guy hits in his sleep. So, I mean, it's going to be one of those three, but I have to say Brendan Rhyan is the one.
Bill, when you look at guys that didn't make this team on a spring training, but you would think at some point during the season we're probably going to see Trey Turner kind of pops out a little bit, option to the minors on Monday. Obviously, he was kind of in the competition at shortstop, although I think Danny Espinosa was the favorite all along. But as Trey Turner heads down to the minor leagues, what does he still need to work on for him to be ready to be a guy that's up with the big league club?
His defense. He's got to work on his defense, especially his arm strength. Also, they told him yesterday that they want him to show more leadership. They want him, even though he's a rookie, they want him to be seen and heard. So that kind of surprised me a little bit. So I think he's going to do it. I think we'll see him in April sometime. He won't be there long, because believe me when I tell you, this guy can hit, and he'll be ready.
Now, if he's going to be up that quickly, what position does he end up taking? Whose spot would he come up? Would it just be a matter of who's struggling at the time, if everybody stays healthy into that time period?
Yes, you can't help but think it's Espinosa, because Espinosa strikes out too much. That's a fact. And the last 3 years, he's hit 217. You cannot deny that. So you hope that Danny Espinosa gets off to a good start. But I think if he doesn't, we'll see, Trey Turner in there pretty soon.
So to start the year with Espinosa winning that job, the biggest difference, he is clearly a better defender at this point than Trey Turner, right?
Right, yes. There's no question about it. He's gold glove material. But the guy could, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but he could strike out like 150, 160 times, maybe more. So I don't know if the Nationals need that right now. They have a lot of guys who strike out a lot, so hopefully he'll cut down, and that will help the Nationals win more games.
You mentioned them asking Turner to be more of a leader and more of a vocal guy. The one thing about that surprises me is you look at this Nationals team, and there's so many veterans. Like, I could see that on a team that's young and needs guys to step up. But this Nationals team, really, when you look around that clubhouse, there isn't a shortage of leadership, right?
No, you're right. But you know what, though? Dusty Baker keeps saying this, that shortstop is a big job, and it's a big role. So he wants that shortstop to be more of a leader. And this is Dusty Baker talking, so... I guess they want Trey Turner to speak up more and see how he feels.
And I guess that's part of the defense, too. If you're going to play that shortstop position and be that defensive leader within the infield, then you need to be ready to be vocal. One guy, Bill, that's had a great spring, I know, and is the team's hoping is going to be a big addition once the season starts, is Ben Revere, and he seems confident. He's had a nice spring. And you had an article this week about adjustments that he made in the offseason and how they're paying off, about how he's handling inside pitches. Can you go into that a little bit and what Ben Revere has done from last year to this year to get even better at the plate?
Well, he has his hands close to his body now, and he feels if he does that, he can see inside pitches and breaking pitches a little better. And people have taken notice that he's pulling the ball better with authority. He has a reputation of hitting the ball the other way. But I think what we're going to see this year is a guy who has a little bit more power, gap power to right field, have more stolen bases. And I think that's the key. I think he's a .295 .295 career batting average. But he thinks he could be higher as long as he makes these adjustments. And so far, so good. .389 batting average, and that's pretty good.
And the Nationals have guys in the middle of that order that can drive them in. So if Ben Revere can be that classic leadoff guy, look out when this offense gets rolling. All right, Bill, let's get into some bold predictions heading into 2016. I know you have a few of them here. I want to go through them and just get your take on how these could come about. Number one is kind of a repeat. Bryce Harper will win the most valuable player will win the most valuable player award again. How has Bryce Harper put up another season? Because I know it's hard to repeat because the voters don't love to vote for the same guy 2 years in a row.
But, you know, I think this is going to be different because he'll have protection this time. This guy won MVP last year without having any protection because of all the injuries. I think everyone's going to be healthy, and Bryce Harper is going to put up even better numbers. Like, to win a batting title will definitely drive in more runs, and I would not be surprised to hit more home runs. So I think we keep comparing his stats last year to Barry Bonds, Babe Ruth. We're going to be saying that again this year.
Less than a week to go until opening day as far as the Phillies go, and Monday was an interesting day for the Phils. They named their fifth starter of the rotation in Vince Velasquez. They also signed Will Venable, who could make this team as a outfielder. Let's start with Velasquez. Through the spring, from what you saw, is there reason to be excited about what he could bring in 2016?
Yeah, I think so. He kind of pitched as delivered, a hard-throwing right-hander with great stuff, probably the best stuff on staff. You know, it's just a matter of him being able to keep the ball down the strike zone and throwing strikes with some of his off-speed stuff. But he really did that later in camp. The first couple weeks, or the first couple starts in spring training, you saw a lot of that talent, you saw a lot of that potential, but he might walk a guy here or there or make the wrong pitch in the wrong spot. But his last two starts, he looked legit, and he kind of saw why the Phillies wanted him so badly in that Ken Giles trade. I mean, he was the key piece of that trade, and like I said, the last two starts he made in the Grapefruit League ended up being very, very good.
Now he gets the fifth starter spot, and Adam Morgan is going to start the year down in Lehigh Valley. But here's another guy that impressed during the spring, right? And I get the feeling that at some point this season we're going to see Adam Morgan up with the Phillies.
Yeah, I think so. In fact, I think if something should happen to one of those five starters right now, he'll be the first option up. You know, Brett Oberholzer has some starting experience, but he's going to start the season in the bullpen. So Morgan is going to be the guy. You know, a lot of people are going to then say, well, what about Jake Thompson, Zach Eflin, Mark Appel, you know, their top pitching prospects. But they want to give those guys more time to develop. So if something happens April, May, June, I think it is going to be Adam Morgan. It was a tough decision for him, obviously. He actually made the argument that he outpitched all the starters in camp. But, hey, that's the way it goes. The Phillies ended up going with the bigger arm, bigger upside guy in Velasquez.
The other move, as I mentioned, Will Venable signing a minor league contract. Venable, 33 years old. He's been a good outfielder throughout his career, spent most of his time out on the West Coast, an athletic guy who has been a spark plug for teams, but he struggled this spring with the Indians. What are his chances of sticking with the Phillies?
I think his chances are very good. And basically I said because they brought him in with five games to go, and so they wouldn't bring him in if they didn't already like him. You know, if they were kind of lukewarm on him, I just don't think they would have brought him into camp, you know, because what's he going to do in five games to really change their mind? So I think he's got a really good chance at making this team. There's really two bench jobs available, and it's down to three guys. It's down to Will Venable, Cedric Hunter, a non-roster guy, and Emmanuel Burris, who's, you know, utility infielder that can also play some outfield. And my guess right now, if I had to put money on it, would be Burris getting a spot because he can play the infield and the outfield. And Pete McCannon has kind of talked about how he likes the flexibility that gives him in these National League games, which would mean then Venable and Cedric Hunter are kind of coming down to that final reserve outfield spot.
So that's the deal as far as positions go. The other thing that's up in the air still is quite a bit of the bullpen, really. When you look at this bullpen, seems like the locks are David Hernandez, Dallier Hinojosa, Genmar Gomez, and Brett Oberholzer, who you mentioned. But that leaves some spots open. So how is this all going to shake out? Who do you think ends up fitting into those spots?
Well, I the Rule 5 pick in camp, left-hander Daniel Stump. I in my writings about this bullpen competition, I have not called him a lock, but I've written that he's is about as close of a lock as you can get. And I think he's on the team. You know, the Phillies, they want to keep young players. He's got a good arm. He's left-handed. He's 26. And he's a Rule 5 guy. So there's no reason on this team this season, a rebuilding season, not to give him a longer evaluation. So I think Daniel Stump is going to get that fifth bullpen job, which leaves two more jobs available. They released Edward Mujica today, basically bringing it down to four people, James Russell, Andrew Bailey, Ernesto Friere, and Hector Neris. I think James Russell is going to get that sixth spot. He's pitched really well in camp, and Pete McCannon said the other day he's leaning towards carrying three left-handers in the bullpen. So you put two and two together, and James Russell gets that job. So now you're looking at the final three spots, and I think it's going to be Hector Neris. He hasn't pitched that well this spring, but he pitched well for the Phillies last season. I think that's going to come into play. He can also give the team multiple innings, which I don't think Bailey and Friere necessarily can. And the other thing that I think fans need to consider is Bailey has a May 1st out clause, so he can start the season in the minor leagues. Friere has an out clause on Thursday, but only if he can find another major league job, and I would be stunned if that happens. So both of those guys can start the season in the minor leagues. So you put all those things together, and I think it's going to be Stumpf, Russell, and Neris taking up those final three spots in the bullpen.
All right, let's get into some bold predictions before the 2016 season. Todd, you've come up with three of them. I just want to go through each of them and get your breakdown of kind of how these will happen. And number one is Franco, 30 homers and an all-star game, which is going to be the easier task, him ending up with 30 homers or him finding his way into the all-star game?
Boy, you know, I think he could – maybe getting to the all-star game might be the easier task for him. He's been really, really impressive this season. This spring. And he was really impressive last year before he got hurt in August when he broke his wrist on a pitch in Arizona. He was really kind of entering that rookie of the year conversation. And he came into camp in great shape. He's had 9 home runs so far this spring. He's really been locked in. And you know, hey, I get it. Spring training numbers are spring training numbers. But in that ballpark in Philly, if he stays healthy, he certainly has 30 home run potential. And, you know, I have a gut feeling that he's going to kind of take that next step among the elite kind of third baseman in the National League.
He's one of those guys where you almost want him to stop hitting home runs during spring training. Like, hey, hold on, wait for the season to start, and then keep hitting these homers. All right.
Right. Many of his teammates of that and his coaching staff have said the same thing. Like, I kind of want him to slow down. You know, let's just stop at 9, and then let's go into the season and start hitting the rest of them when they actually count.
Joe, less than a week until opening day, as spring training kind of winds down, obviously the team making some last moves and trying to figure out those last parts of the roster. On Tuesday, Justin Maxwell and Don Kelly released, so they're free agents. Also, Nefi Ogando and Jose Urena optioned to AAA. Did you expect Maxwell and Kelly from the start to have kind of a hard time making this roster?
Yeah, obviously. Non-roster invitees, both of them. Don Kelly, will start to take him first. He made the opening day roster last year, but you know, keep in mind he had Tommy John surgery in July, so he was on the field playing games seven and a half months after surgery, and you know, now we're 8.5 months. So he's played very well, and you know, accounted for himself really well. The Marlins are kind of hopeful that both of those guys wind up in their AAA. And that is certainly possible. You wish them well in trying to get big league jobs elsewhere. But if that isn't to work out, both have open invitations to go to New Orleans and be, you know, in position for an injury or two to get back to the big leagues.
Some other injury issues for the Marlins, but we're going to pause on that for a second because I want to get some better news in here as we get going in the podcast. And you wrote a story as far as Marlins X Factor, I know, and you had Jared Cozart as that guy. That stuff is obviously there. Do you get the feeling after seeing him this spring that he's ready to kind of put it all together?
Yeah, you know, it's always been there. Last year he dealt with a really bizarre injury, is an inner ear disorder, vertigo also. So it's not like he had an arm injury or is recovering from a knee injury or shoulder or anything. He's, you know, just talking about stability and balance on the mound. So all that has been squared away. Obviously doesn't have a ton of innings, you know, from last year. So wear and tear on the arm isn't there. He's kind of been a pet project of Jim Benedict, the VP of pitching development, and pitching coach Juan Nieves, who've done a really good job with him, kind of you know, polishing up some stuff and delivery to create more downward angle on his fastball, and introduce a little bit more of the changeup. So there's a real lot to like about Cozart. His fastball has already been very effective, has a lot of natural cut to it. He's got downward tilt, and he's throwing 94 to 98 miles an hour. So there's a real lot to like about Jared Cozart. But the question is, do you hold up and get the job done?
A couple of scares for this team late in spring training. One, Tom Kohler struck on the right elbow by a comebacker. I know it happened in a minor league game. Seems like he's feeling okay, but what's the latest on Kohler?
Yeah, real scary moment. On Monday, the team was scheduled to play up in Vieira, and they kept against the Nationals, and that game ended up being washed out. That was Kohler's day to throw, so rather than send him up to Vieira, they put him on a backfield based in a minor league game against Marlins minor leaguers. And he's, the aim was to get into 100 pitches. And next thing you know, he gets struck by a comeback, liner. Basically got hit in the funny bone, and received a real scare. Didn't even need x-rays. He said he's feeling fine. The team was going to monitor it. He was back playing catch the next morning. So there's a lot to be encouraged that they feel that he dodged, a bullet there. But, key for Kohler now is just to kind of watch and make sure these next few days before the season goes that he indeed is fine, that they don't, kind of overdo it if he has a bruise, So it obviously, I don't think it's going to affect him in terms of opening the year in the DL or anything. It may not even affect if he is named the number three starter, but it might also give an opportunity to say maybe he should pitch maybe game four or five rather than game three, just to, back him off a little bit. But that remains to be seen. The bigger picture is Kohler is healthy and fine and seems to have gotten away with one. But it's always a real danger. I've seen guys the last day of camp, when you're Alejandro Diaza now hooking up with the Mets, he was in Marlins camp. He literally got hurt the last game of spring training at the old Sun Life Stadium on a ball in the ninth inning in the outfield. He had a collision in the outfield, went on the DL. So, this is before opening day, you just hold your breath whenever guys are on the field.
Yeah, get everybody healthy to opening day. And another scary injury, not for the 2016 Marlins, but certainly as you look forward to the future. The number one prospect in the organization is Tyler Kolek, just 20 years old, was a high draft pick a couple of years ago. Discomfort in the right elbow. And whenever you hear those words, it's always scary, Joe, because oftentimes the next thing you hear is Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, and it's certainly possible, It would be terrible news for him to miss the year, but he's also young in his professional career. Like you said, 20 years old, would have plenty of time to recover and have a get back into next year about this time or a little later. But a guy who they have tremendous hopes for, it was the number two pick in the draft a couple of years ago. Expectation is very high for Tyler, but right now getting the arms strong and ready is the primary concern.
Obviously, when you take a high school arm, a guy like Kohler, who I know was very raw at the time, throws really hard, I think he hit triple digits when he was in high school. But when you take a guy like that, and it's for the future, and then the next guy taken in the draft is a Carlos Rodon, who's already in the White Sox rotation, it kind of naturally makes people second guess, doesn't it? Now,
Nola was in that draft,
right.
And Schwarber, and there you could go on. I think there are four or five guys that were in the big leagues last year that were taken behind. Obviously, sore subject, around Marlins fans. But guys get paid. People get paid to make decisions. The Marlins went that way instead of Rodon, who made a lot of sense at the time, but they chose to go in another direction. And even when you look at Aaron Nola, his brother Austin Nola is in the Marlins minor league system and is still in camp, although he'll open a year in New Orleans.
Now, that said, the other side of that is that in 3 years, Tyler Kohler could be a top-of-the-rotation guy, better than any of those other guys that we mentioned.
Only time will
tell.
That's what they're banking on.
Right.
The stuff is there. And as you noted earlier, I think he hit 102 in high school, and that was like the highest rating ever by a high school pitcher. But, so they saw a real workhorse, body, because he's big. He's like 6'5 or 6'6, about 260, 70 pounds. and throws very hard. But, yeah, as you know, it doesn't matter how big or strong you are when you pitch, you're vulnerable.
Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Braves reporter Mark Bowman. And, Mark, as we record this podcast on Tuesday afternoon, the new news out of Braves camp is that Jeff Francoeur has made this team, which maybe when spring training started seemed like kind of an outside shot, but Frenchie is back where it all began. He'll be with the Braves on opening day. Talk about what he did this spring to kind of force the Braves a little bit and to earn his way onto this roster.
You know, when he signed the minor league deal back on February 23rd, he looked at the roster and he thought, at least they're giving him a place to come and be in a comfort zone to prove himself. Maybe another team will pick him up. I just didn't see the fit here with the Braves, and that fit still doesn't necessarily exist. They're going to have to make another move to create a roster spot for Jeff. But that tells you how much this organization appreciates what Jeff has to offer at this stage of his career. Obviously, when he got to Atlanta back in 2005, he was a superstar in the making and achieved instant success. This stage of his career over the last 6 years, since the Braves traded him in 2009, he's been somewhat of a nomad. And he even spent all the 2014 season at the minor league level. But I think last year with Philadelphia, what Jeff did was he came to appreciate that what he could offer as a bench player, that right-handed power source off the bench, a guy who can hit some lefties. He did hit right-handers better than left-handers last year, but the Braves still, they've seen enough from here in spring training to think that he can certainly benefit their bench as a guy, as a right-handed option off the bench, and a guy who can play either corner or outfield position. You're comfortable doing that. He spent some time in center field, but what Jeff brings to that clubhouse is a lot of leadership, some energy. He's dealt with adversity, and this is a team that's going to encounter some adversity this year. It might be nice for him to be around some of the young kids. I saw as they were waiting for the announcements here today, you saw Jace Peterson and some of the other younger players kind of walk around asking me, have you heard anything? Have you heard anything? Everyone was kind of pulling for Jeff. Unfortunately, when a decision like this is made, it also affects somebody else. And it could be Emilio Bonifacio, a guy that they signed in December for a one-year, $1.25 million deal. From the minute that deal was signed, you didn't really understand it. And now we're getting to a point where there could be some other moves made, but it's more likely that he is the guy that's affected by this decision. The Braves probably have to just end up eating his contract.
I guess the only other real option, if they were to somehow try to keep Emilio Bonifacio, would be to trade Michael Bourne. Would that be but then you're eating most of his contract, right?
Exactly. Then all of a sudden, you're talking about a difference between $1.25 million with Bonifacio and $14 million. And that team is certainly not going to trade for Michael Bourne at $14 million. You're probably looking at a team taking a million or two, being willing. But I really think, like I said, the more likely thing is Bonifacio. The question now is, where does Bourne fit? You've got a left-handed center fielder already in Ciarte. If Jeff Francoeur is going to spend some time in left field, maybe that limits his time there. But what I'm guessing is what we'll see is Hector Olivera will get most of the time in left field. You may occasionally see Michael Bourne out there against a tough right-hander or any day that Olivera needs a little breather. But it is going to be interesting to see how they fit these pieces together. It may not be the perfectly constructed roster, and there aren't many of those. But at the same time, I think what the Braves have done is try to put some good character guys in that clubhouse with Michael Bourne and Jeff Francoeur certainly being fitting that description, because, like I said, this team's going to face an adversity this year, and it'll be nice for some of these young players like a Jace Peterson and some of the young pitchers, Whistler and Foltynewicz, to be around some guys that can help them deal with what they're going to encounter this year.
You mentioned Foltynewicz, and he's kind of won his job into this starting rotation, but not all those spots are settled. It seemed like Jolys Chacín was going to be a guy that found a way into that rotation. But as we sit about a week out from opening day, how is that rotation shaking up at the back end?
You know what? In all honesty, we're basically right where we were at the beginning of camp, minus the fact that Foltynewicz is much further ahead of schedule and now is a legitimate candidate for that fifth spot. He got beat up the other night. His last start against the Astros gave up four homers. That gives a reason, or gives the Braves reason for pause, and reminds them that, hey, look, this guy, we don't want to rush him back, but he has time to make two more starts before they would need that fifth spot in the rotation. I just see Mike Fulton as a guy who has tremendous upside, much more than even James Perez, who did pitch. He had his own troubles in that same game there in the fourth inning, came back and pitched well. But by the time he was doing that, Carlos Correa, George Springer, Colby Rasmus were already out of the game. So, you know, that's what you deal with when you're trying to evaluate guys here during spring training, is who are they facing. So, what I see is Chacin has also given the Braves some reason to at least evaluate his situation. But he only cost $950,000. I think it would be wise to put him there in that fourth spot. Let Fulton Evich step into the fifth spot and use Williams Perez, either send him to Gwinnett to start or use him as your long reliever. Because Williams Perez can step in there and start if necessary. But I think if Mike Fulton Evich is ready, he should be the guy there to be in that spot at the beginning of the season, the fifth spot.